Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Incomparable, number 692, November 2023.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I'm your host, Jason Snell. This episode is all about a new film in theaters as we record this. Yeah, it's true, although it'll be, you know, elsewhere soon enough. It is The Marvels, the sequel to Captain Marvel. It's also sort of a sequel to Ms. Marvel, the TV show on Disney Plus, and kind of a sequel to portions of content in a plot line in WandaVision, another show on Disney Plus, a little sort of. Anyway, here to talk about this film and also sort of, I think maybe a little bit later about where the Marvel movies are in the world right now and where they might go, are these wonderful people. Chip Sutterth is here. Hi, Chip.
You know my name.
Chip, not actually his name, though. Shannon Sutterth also here. Hello, Shannon.
Hola, freakies.
James Thompson is here. Hello.
Would you say the sequel is higher, furrier, and faster?
Oh, it's definitely furrier. Sarah Bickerton is here. Sarah, hello. Welcome.
Oh, Captain, my Captain.
And Kelly Gamont. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. Did we just change places right there?
Various panelists will swap places during the Marvels.
Nice. I've always wanted to visit New Zealand.
That's right. Well, this is, it's a long flight. So let me tell you, it's a lot easier to do it that way. 2019 is when Captain Marvel came out. It seems like a million years ago.
Well, technically it was.
I know. I mean, no, technically it wasn't, but I mean, then in another sense, it absolutely
emotionally
was a world ago, a world ago, an eon ago.
It literally was a different world when that movie was released.
So the reason we're doing this, we've been doing a lot of movie episodes of The Incomparable after they show up on streaming and not in theaters, because theaters are not as much a thing as they were pre-pandemic. However, I just had a huge number of panelists who saw the Marvels in the theaters the first week and thought, well, let's strike while the iron is hot. And one of my points in doing that was that the box office for this wasn't great. There seems to be a lot of oh, by the way, the actors couldn't promote it because of a strike that ended right when the movie came out. Mm-hmm. And yet everybody who I know who saw it liked it. So we thought maybe it would be an opportunity to enter a little bit into the narrative of low box office and some people pushing back at this movie to talk about the movie perhaps more positively. I mean, I've got mixed feelings about it, but generally I liked it. And I thought we would talk about it. But I wanted to start with 2019 and Captain Marvel, because one of the things that struck me about the level of difficulty of this movie, and I'm wondering what all of you think, is not only is it a sequel to a movie that was quite a while ago, especially in our mental landscape, but also, if you remember, Captain Marvel was set in the past. It was in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And as a result, this movie is a sequel to a movie a while ago, but also a sequel to a movie that took place a very long time ago. And I felt like that increased the level of difficulty of this movie. I know we've seen Captain Marvel since, but like making ties to events that happened decades before in the storyline is also a really tricky thing. So I don't know. I felt like going into this, because this movie feels to me very much like it's an attempt to make a proper sequel to Captain Marvel. And I'm not sure that was a good idea, but it certainly increased their level of difficulty, because they can't just say, hey, remember that thing that happened? Now we're going to pick up the thread. It's more like, remember that thing that happened? Well, 30 years passed. Like, okay, that's,
I mean,
yeah.
To be fair, the Captain America first and second movie, there was a bit of a time jump between those two as well.
Yeah, and I think it also depends on sort of which angle you're coming in from. Yes, I watched Captain Marvel at the time, and yes, I liked it very much, but I was there for Ms. Marvel. I was coming at it from looking at it as the next step after Ms. Marvel and, you know, had very little trouble following along from that angle.
Yeah, that's. I'm actually going to agree with Shannon on this one because I saw it as tonally, I found it more in common with Ms. Marvel than with Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel had a lot more 90s angst about it. And
flannel.
Yep. Yeah, as you do.
A lot more heavy lifting with, women and women being victimized and then getting out from that situation. This one's much lighter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. It tonally, I think this is more, and that was like midway through the movie, I was like, okay, I feel like this is a Ms. Marvel sequel rather than a Captain Marvel sequel.
I think that's fair. I think that there are a lot of on-ramps to this story, but I think the best thing that the movie has working for it as a movie, if you go into it, if you actually open the door and go into it, is that it is a romp. And yes. You really don't need Captain Marvel, Ms. Marvel, certainly not WandaVision, in order to enjoy it for what it is. But I think you're right, Jason, in the sense that there's still sort of a barrier to entry. People come into the MCU expecting that they need to know the lore. And there's actually a lot of lore behind this one, and some of it is 4 years old.
So the thing that I noticed about it was because this is the thing that Marvel movies have had to do now in sort of the new age of Disney Plus and Marvel Television is a thing that Lisa Schmeiser says regularly on I Want My MCU TV, which is this is entertainment. I don't want to feel like I have homework in order to understand everything that's going on. And they sort of have to walk that line of how do we explain enough for people who don't watch the TV shows versus over explaining to people who did watch the TV shows and are impatient for the rest of the movie to get on. And it's starting to feel like with enough different things, because I don't know if anybody knows this, but Marvel still does in fact make comic books, that they're starting that some of the film lore and the TV lore and the storytelling and all of that and the way it's all interconnected is starting to get a little vast and can, you know, and we're going to end up with one of those things they usually do in the comic books every, I don't know, 20 years or so, where there's some huge, massive event across every single title and they like burn everything down and then kind of reboot
yeah.
The new improved
20 years? It felt like it was happening every 5 years in the
90s. It gets faster. Soon it'll be every month.
Yeah, in the 90s it was different. So I feel like that's part of what this is starting to suffer from is because, as you laid out right at the beginning, it's a sequel to a bunch of different things in some form or another. Like this is the next step of story for each of our three main characters, but two of our main characters are basically from two of the different TV shows. And even though one of them made a cameo sort of in Captain Marvel, and then we've got Captain Marvel, and this is sort of the proper sequel where she's very prominently featured and not just part of an ensemble, like of loads of people. She's one of three in this, as opposed to one of, you know, six
one
or
of those
eight,
Avengers,
you know,
movies. Sure.
Yeah. So I feel like that's part of what this suffered from. And I really enjoyed, I know we'll get into the rest of it, but overall, I enjoyed it. But, you know, with a little bit of scrutiny, it's a little hard to it starts to creak a little bit as you look a little closer.
I like this movie. I found it extremely enjoyable. It was a fun ride. I think the best thing about it is that it is a fun ride and it's fun. And I want to talk about Ms. Marvel, and I don't even know what we're calling her. What is it? Captain Trouble?
Captain Rambo.
Yeah, she's Captain Spectrum, the other Captain Marvel, the Photon. There are many references.
Marvel is my favorite. Yeah.
There are many, many references being made in this. The best one is when she gets the poofy thing that's like actually the Monica Rambo Captain Marvel thing, and she tears it all off immediately. It's great. But I want to start with... the reason I want to start with a baggage of another movie that I liked, Captain Marvel, is that I think it's the weakest part of the movie, and I think it's unnecessary because it is like, okay, so the burden here is that there is a story about what happened after Captain Marvel, which is she goes back to the Kree and gets her revenge and destroys the Supreme Intelligence. And we're told in kind of a download in this movie that she did this and that they have suffered a civil war and then an ecological disaster. And from this, we get our Dar-Ben, the baddie of the movie, who is using portals to steal natural resources from other planets to kind of revive the Kree homeworld. And so that it's a lot, and it feels like it's trying to drive that direct line from the original Captain Marvel movie. And I personally don't think it works very well. I think there's something there, right? It's like there's a different movie that is a real parable about ecological disaster and climate change and things like that, where these people are stealing the air and the water and the sunlight from other places. But it doesn't really quite go over the threshold for me. It feels like it's not really explained very well. And when they do stop, it kind of slows the movie down. And I think Dar-Ben as a character, because so much is a download, I don't think she's very interesting. She just kind of grimaces and flies around and then is sort of defeated because the plot wills it that it's time for the movie to be over and for her to be defeated. And you convince me otherwise if you like or agree with me, whatever, but like that's the part of the movie that I thought, what a weird choice. Like, did they feel like they had to do that? Because while it does say some things about Carol's character, like using it as the whole motivator for the movie, it felt like there are other parts of this movie that are really shiny and interesting and fun, and then this just feels creaky and obligatory, and it didn't work for me.
Yeah.
I acknowledge that it's that the villain, that storyline, it is kind of like the weakest part of the movie because it's a plot and it feels like a plot from an episode from an issue of a comic book. You know, and comic books that get, you know, put out month to month to month have all of these different slight villains, small things that are important to the villain, but not as important in the overall arc of the heroes, because that's how comic books work. And for me, I didn't mind it. I mean, I was there for the team. I was there for the three Marvels. I wanted to see them bounce off of each other. And well, they needed something to solve as they were bouncing off each other. So it didn't bother me at all. I see that it was, you know, not the best use of the actress who played the villain. Certainly, you know, left, you know, some plot holes, some unevenness here and there. But I came into this, you know, like I said, I wanted my Ms. Marvel. I got my Ms. Marvel. It is possibly the most movie that's like its comic book than I've seen in a very long time. I was trying to think. My only thing I can think of is the original Batman from way back in Michael Keaton's time, capturing some of that Frank Miller-ish noir, you know. So it worked for me.
Yeah. So I loved Captain Marvel, the original film. Like, really loved it. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite of all the Marvel movies, like hands down, 100%. It was the first film that I actually bought on 4K Blu-ray because I was of the Marvel films, because I adored this film so much. And I wanted a sequel to that. I wanted more character development. And this was before the Marvels was announced as a film back when at one of the Comic-Cons. I wanted a continuation of the hit points and developments that occurred in Captain Marvel and a continuation of her character development. As soon as I heard about that the Marvels was going to be the sequel to Captain Marvel, while I was like, woohoo, we're getting these two characters, that's awesome, I was like, okay, I somehow suspect we're not going to get the film I want,
right,
which is annoying, and damn you, Marvel, you should give me the film I want.
Which should probably have picked up, see, because the problem is they bring her to the present in order to solve Thanos, right? And as a result, she never gets, you know, Captain America gets frozen in ice and taken to the future, but like, she lives out this interesting second chapter in her life once she realizes who she is, and we never get to see it because it's a time jump. And yeah, Sarah, we still don't see it in this movie. They're just like, nope, forget about it. That happened in the 90s. We don't talk about the 90s anymore. And
I felt like they simultaneously had to give us a villain and a MacGuffin and a sort of a plot thing for the Marvels to go up against, but also to explain why Carol was largely away from the MCU from the 90s to Endgame, that there was something going on to give a reason for emotional tension between her and Monica Rambeau. And it is a bit messy.
I mean, firstly, I do also have a 4K Blu-ray of Captain Marvel, so, you know.
Right. Okay, we're all, same. You're all great. Okay.
As do I.
We all love it.
That's the one I bought. Same thing for you.
I mean, I was kind of worried for this movie going into it because I did really enjoy the original Captain Marvel a lot. And I enjoyed the Ms. Marvel series a lot. And I loved the comics of both of them. The trailers for this look good, but there was kind of like doom and gloom around this film. And the MCU in general, and we can get into that. But this, the whole thing was just fun. And it was the most that I've actually, like, I'm not saying that this is the best Marvel movie, but it's the most fun that I've had in a Marvel movie in years.
Yeah.
You know, like going back to like Shang-Chi or some No Way Home or even like that.
This is why I bring up the Captain Marvel stuff, because I feel like there is a movie that never got made that is the movie that Sarah wanted to see, which is the literal follow-up to Captain Marvel. And for whatever reason, which might have been darker, right? Because it really is about her dealing with how do you do revenge? And she essentially destroys a
aftermath
planet, right? Like, I mean, they set the on each other, but by destroying the great, or whatever it is, great intelligence, superior
intelligence.
You know, it's great intelligence is Doctor Who anyway.
The
Annette Bening hologram destroys it, and it effectively destroys them. And that there would be something interesting there about like the nature of revenge and her complicity and how does she deal with it? And is she trying to run away from Earth and all of that? But the MCU, you know, like moved on to Endgame and wanted to bring her into the continuum immediately and doesn't want to make that movie. And what's left, it feels like to me, are the remnants of it, which is this plot line that drags us through the movie. And it does, you know, it gets us there. But when James says, and all of us have said this at some point, it's so fun, I have to point at one of the things that was said earlier, which is this is also a sequel to Ms. Marvel, which was a fun TV show.
Yes.
And even if you didn't see it, even if you thought it was okay and not great, I'll tell you this. I have a hard time believing that anybody could make an argument that Ms. Marvel and Iman Vellani does not steal this movie.
Yes.
And
oh,
it's
absolutely.
Truth.
And it's not that Brie Larson isn't great, because Brie Larson is really great. she's a great
she's
actress.
Better than she was in the first
and
one.
She is.
Yes. Yep.
And Teyonah Parris is good in this too, and they are a great trio. And they, I think this movie uses Sam Jackson okay, because he's kind of like, it's sort of like roll your eyes at Nick Fury. But my big point here is, that's the movie that works here. And one of the reasons it works is because Ms. Marvel injects fun, and she's a surrogate for the audience in a way, but she's also, she keeps it light. She gets to experience all the fun things. And sometimes Marvel movies forget being a superhero is probably fun, unless you're Spider-Man. You get to see cool planets and stuff. And the Marvels never lets you forget it, because Ms. Marvel is always there, excited and having a good time. And that's like when I complain about the remnants of sort of like the actual actual Captain Marvel sequel that sort of kind of percolates in the background here, it's because I see the other movie they actually decided to make, and it's way better. It's way more fun.
So I went and saw this with two people who one of them goes and sees every Marvel movie is generally my movie date opening weekend if there's something in a theater for us to go and see. And then my other friend has sort of seen one here and there and went to this with us. And at the end of the movie, we were talking and he said, so the part where they were talking about she went to the planet and destroyed it and all of that. And I said, yeah. And he said, which movie was that?
And I said, Captain Marvel 2, not made.
And I said, but they really like, yeah. And basically we were like, yeah, they just sort of described it, but we never saw that on film. So if they've explored that in like a spin-off comic or something, then no, I can't tell you any more than you found out in the movie about that particular plot. And so I think, Jason, you nailed it in that the Ms. Marvel sequel parts of this movie are great and they hold up really well and they're very well done. And the Captain Marvel parts and the Monica Rambeau parts kind of are the parts that are a little creakier and don't hold up quite as well. And maybe that's just because they did not have Ms. Marvel's mom in them. And yeah, maybe that's part of the problem.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, the source material for these three for these three characters is original Captain Marvel, which we've discussed, Ms. Marvel, which we're discussing, and WandaVision, which is breathtakingly original, but also complicated, and it was just something unlike everything else in the MCU.
And the part with Monica in it is really just in there to set this movie up. Honestly, yes, it's not really of a kind with the rest of that show.
Yeah, it's so, just to move her on to like, be in the movies,
to give her powers so that she can do this other thing later. And yeah, exactly right. And it's like I'm okay with it not being required reading. I actually think that the Ms. Marvel stuff reads pretty quickly when you get into it. Of like, oh, this is a girl who has powers who's a huge fan of Captain Marvel and who gets to work with her now. That's really
what you need. Yeah. Well, and her family,
but her family, right? And they come to space, which I thought that's a questionable decision by Nick Fury, but it all works out. It's fine. We'll bring the family to space. They probably insisted, right? The mom probably insisted that they go to space, so they do.
I don't think she insisted. I think she just told them this is what's happening, there was
Fury,
no. But you have to take us. It was we're going.
We're going until because you're the only person who knows where our daughter is. So you're stuck with us.
We're a package deal. That's that.
Yeah.
I assume some of that was for their protection, given that there'd been, you know, random Kree knocking holes in their house.
That's true. That's a good point. So, I mean, look, it's not just Iman Vellani, although she is great, and the way the character is written, she's just super enthusiastic, and they have to get her to tamp it down and all that. But because of that, and because the plot involves this thing that kind of happens very quickly and goes away as soon as it's not convenient anymore, where they keep switching locations, but it leads to some fun fights where the people keep changing and some fun situations where everybody is a fish out of water and somebody else, like Captain Marvel, appears in Kamala's house. And she basically is like, oh, that's weird, and leaves. And they're like, what just happened? and Kamala ends up in the spacesuit that Monica was in. But like the core of this movie that works so well is also just that it's a trio. They are, remember, it does. Fortunately, the movie does not stick with the we're not a team for very long, because it's very clear that they are, and that's just how it's going to be. And all that stuff, right? All that stuff is delightful. It's one of these funny things where, like, yeah, there's a big fight where Darben's got the hammer from Guardians of the Galaxy, which I guess, even though it doesn't have an Infinity Stone in it anymore, is still a very powerful weapon. And it's like, okay, all right. And she's doing stuff, but it's like, no, that's not the stuff that I'm going to remember from this movie. It's going to be all the personal interaction. It's all the dialogue. It's those three people on a spaceship together bumping into each other. It is the family of Kamala worried about her. And it's going to be some of the particularly creative flights of fancy of the movie, like the planet that is the beach planet where everybody sings and is a Bollywood dance number all the time, apparently. Right? Like that there.
And creative use of suddenly an army of Flurkins.
Yes, which I got spoiled on in the trailer and made me sad, because that is such a funny bit. Like, why is the Nick Fury space station bit in there? It's in there because the Flurkin kittens, okay? That's why it's in there. And it's funny to me we should talk about the three of them working together and all of that. And we should do that because that is the part of this movie that like overrides all the rest of it. It's so just delightful to see that stuff. And that's always what's going to stick with me from this movie.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Carol's got a more defined personality than she did in the 2019 movie, largely because she spent most of that movie trying to
recover her memory, right?
Yeah. And such. But you've got Kamala Khan idol worshiping Carol, and you've got Monica Rambeau deeply hurt and feeling abandoned by Carol.
Right.
And the dynamic between them at the start of the movie and the, you know, this is a relatively breezy movie. You know, it goes by fast. So they go from mistrust and idol worship at the one end to a team at the other. But those moments, the training montage and things like that, the conversations that they have up to that, that's what really holds this movie together.
Mm.
Yeah. And the way they shift, it's like, at each point, it's somebody else is like being the emotional foundation. It keeps changing and it feels very true to life because friendships, real life, getting to know people, it's not static. You have, you know, a time when Monica's the one trying to balance and calm Kamala down because she's, you know, standing in front of her idol and trying to get Carol to be like, okay, just go with this flow, go with it. And then at another point, you've got Kamala taking the two of them and saying literally pulling them together in a hug physically, as well as, you know, emotionally saying, okay, you have thrashed out some of your issues. It's a healing process. We're taking the next step. So I loved the way that, it was a true tripod of a dynamic.
I liked the fact that they also kind of sorted their problems out relatively quickly. You know, there wasn't this whole kind of like, you know, most people said, no, you're right. I kind of was a jerk. And then they just talked it out.
It lets us get to the fun sooner. And like other movies, they don't get to that point until the end. And then they're like, great, we can have fun now. And the movie ends. Yeah. And it's like, no, let's do that sooner, please. And
what happened after the shawarma date?
Who knew that women would actually sit down and have a conversation where they deal through their emotional issues and before moving on with stuff?
That was the subtext of what I was saying. But yes, that was
as a lifelong watcher of Days of Our Lives, I'm here to tell you that's not always how it works. but the thing I really liked about it was that it showed that all of them had something valuable to offer to the team. And, you know, even though Kamala's very new at this, and, you know, when we saw at the beginning, this was part of what I enjoyed about this, was that Monica and Kamala have something in common because Monica couldn't fly to begin with. And until Nick Fury started yelling Black Girl Magic at her, which was very funny. Go! And then, you know, she went, you know, like, what kind of motivator that must have been. But, I really liked that they found that everybody found common ground, that Carol and Kamala had common ground, Monica and Kamala had common ground, and that they were, and that all of them brought something useful to it. You know, like some of it was a little bit of Kamala's, you know, weapons grade enthusiasm for just being there, you know, which was huge. And, you know, like, I think probably, you know, helped the rest of them. And I the thing that was interesting to me about watching like all the way through was they kept saying the end of the world, the end of the universe. And I feel like they had to keep saying that because it felt like a fun, lighter movie. And the stakes weren't, I think they had to keep repeating it because it never felt like the stakes were intergalactic.
The plot is serious. Okay. Like, we're having fun, but the plot is serious.
Plot.
All right.
Yeah, we mean it. We really do. We mean it. But like watching, I really liked that all three of them had value in a way that made them, Shannon, like you said, like a tripod, like all three of them, it took all three of them to do what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether it was Planet Bollywood, whether it was, you know, like the other things that they were doing, I had a bunch of questions about that purple hammer because I feel like it evaporated at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy, but
I don't know, it's back.
Maybe I'm wrong about that.
They had another one. They had a spare. You always have two. Two is one and one is none. So you always have an extra ultimate weapon, the penultimate weapon, but it becomes the ultimate weapon when the ultimate weapon is defeated or something like that.
When you find something you really like, you always buy
you
two.
You buy two because they're going to discontinue the ultimate weapons because, and then you don't have one.
It won't be the right size or the right shade of purple and then you're stuck. Yeah. So, yeah, but yeah. Like, I really, it was interesting to me that dynamic that they were trying to, like, everything was intergalactic, you know, and it was huge consequences and it was going to be the end of everything everywhere. Right. And that's why we need help, you know, and, but then, you know, here comes Kamala's family to make sure everybody's eaten and that everyone is making good choices and all of that. And, you know, like the balance of that, I feel like that was... I really enjoyed it, but it sort of didn't feel like it matched up. It sort of felt like two different movies.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
There's a tone mismatch here, and I feel like they could have probably done it, but they would have had to go further in the idea of making it feel like don't worry about it too much, or they would have needed to change the undergirding plot to be something that is lighter, a quest or something like that leads them to the various planets or something like that. And it feels very much like they had, I mean, I don't want to speculate too much because you never know how these movies come together, but it feels to me like they had a more straightforward Captain Marvel sequel at some point in a draft and that all this stuff got laid on top of it. And we still, you can see that other movie kind of peeking through and it's kind of a mismatch. But again, you know, overall, I think all of us kind of are agreeing here. It's like, it kind of doesn't matter because we are all having so much fun along the way. And it would have been, I think, a better movie if they had ironed out the tonal problems a little bit more. But it's okay. It's just every time that we get to Darben and she's grimacing and showing us her teeth and I'm like, okay, whatever. But it's okay.
Cause then
onto the next fun, silly thing that happens. And Carol is a loner, right? Like she, in the first movie, she's basically rebelled against her squad. She does discover with her memories that she did have her best friend, Maria Rambo. And at the end, she kind of goes off into space. And in the Avengers movies, she sort of like comes back from space for decades and is like, she's just out there. In Endgame, she is like on a hologram and she's like, hey, I'm in space later. And it's like, it's just her. So I think, I think the dynamic here is fun in that you see like, Kamala will not let her be a loner, right? Essentially, that's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And right at the end, towards the end, when they stop being entangled, they go, oh, okay, the entanglement has stopped. You actually see Brie Larson, Carol Danvers.
Yes, Carol was actually, she felt a loss.
Yeah. 100%. I didn't think I was the only one to see that. Yeah, it was like, oh, I lost that. I had that. It's gone.
Yeah, thanks to all of these new characters and the relationships, but also to the passage of time that, you know, the movie doesn't give you a lot of exposition, but Brie Larson is, even at the beginning of the movie, she's moving looser. She's showing more emotion. She's not being the... Marvel's toughest character or Marvel's most powerful character archetype that I think the MCU picked up from the comics and just sort of laid that on her. When we in the middle of the movie, when we land on the space station and we see that it's crowded with kittens and they come up with the master plan that the kitty's got to get fed. Kitty's got to get fed. As soon as they come up with that plan,
Chip, they're bigger on the inside. Okay.
Absolutely. That reference acknowledged. Brie Larson, once they come up with a plan, she is immediately running like a six-year-old off camera. Yeah. Come here, kitty. And that's just perfectly delightful. And I think that's what the character needs. That's what the movie needs. And and we haven't even talked about the dance number and the pretty Disney princess.
And then conversely, you know, there's, you know, these lighter moments that she has, and there's also much more, and it's part of its opportunity because of the way the Captain Marvel film went. But she's able to connect and recognize emotional situations a lot more easily. You know, she, you know, snaps at Kamala as they're trying to get as many refugees off of Tarnax with the scroll planet,
yeah.
Trying to get as many of them off. And Kamala, of course, wants to get everyone out because, you know, Kamala is young and she is not as experienced yet to realize that, you know, sometimes you can't. And, you know, Carol snaps at her to get her. And, you know, and also, you know, Iman Vellani lets it show, like, you know, I can't believe, you know, it's like that first bit of the rose colored glasses slipping.
Never meet your heroes.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit.
And then later on, and then Carol apologizes later, you know, to say, I should not have snapped at you like that. You know, it's, you know, almost in a, you know, big sister or motherly, you know, acknowledging, you know, yes, I'm the authority, but I may have overstepped it. And then later on, I think that's a step to helping her get up the courage to explain to Monica why she stayed away so long, that she truly felt she could not come back until she had fixed all the things.
Yeah.
So I really love those developments.
And we also had on the second planet where Captain Marvel's the one who wants to save everybody and won't let it happen.
Right.
And she basically hits the big red button and is like, no, we need to leave because if she gets this bangle, it all goes bad.
Exactly.
So I was just kind of, I was thinking about the three of them and the kind of the central mechanic of them swapping. And I've seen the film twice, and I was like, the second time I was like trying to keep track of like, okay, how do we get person A here, person B here? And it's like when they were doing this, it was, you know, like the fox and the chicken and the sack of grain, except they were working it out backwards. And I can imagine all the like the fight scenes and everything. There must have been just like post-it notes all over the wall. Like, okay, where is this person? Where do we want this person? We need to swap these two. Then we put this one here. And
what will give us the funny moment of Kamala seeing the Flurkin do her thing for the first time and just absolutely screaming.
Mm. Yeah. Yes. I mean, I think that, you know, Iman Vellani is basically in the film. I'm not entirely sure that she is playing a character. I think it's just her natural reaction to everything.
Well, it's perfect. It's perfect casting.
And she's not. Yeah.
She herself is a Marvel Comics fan and a Ms. Marvel fan who then gets cast as Ms. Marvel, and then she gets to be in this big movie with Captain Marvel, and it is perfect.
And then gets
casting.
To write the Ms. Marvel comics.
Comic, yeah.
Apparently, on set, she actually has a notebook of Marvel backstory that she has, like, with post-its and all that kind of stuff, that is her own creation of, like, knowing the backstory of everything that's going on.
Yeah.
And it's like, A, that's a commentary on the MCU, but B, it's also her.
She needs her research to write her fanfic.
Well, she said when they cast her and they did the behind the scenes about Ms. Marvel, one of the things they showed was she fell in love with Captain Marvel, and there's pictures of her as a little girl years before Disney Plus existed, before there were Marvel movies, pictures of her dressed up as Ms. Marvel for Halloween.
Yeah.
So she was kind of always sort of destined to be this person. And like, that's the other piece of it that I really, really love, is that that they could not have gone back in time and created an actor in a lab to have been a better Ms. Marvel than they got with her.
What you seek will find you.
And honestly, Marvel, Marvel movies don't spend a lot of time on fame and fandom, even though fandom is such a core part of these movies and of comics and superheroes in general. We see it a little bit. There's some Spider-Man stuff that deals with a little bit, of course, in a negative way, because it's Spider-Man and he's a Buzzkill, that's his thing. But here with Kamala, like they linger. I'm so happy they do. They linger on the shot of the drawing in her room that is the BFFs with her and Ms. Marvel, or Captain Marvel and Ms. Marvel, where it's just like, to make it clear, like Carol immediately is like, oh, it's a super
What's
fan.
What's going on?
It's a super fan. And has she, I have lots of questions that the movie doesn't care to answer, and that's fine, about like, has she even dealt with, as such a loner, has she dealt with people looking up to her or people being impressed by her or anything? Or is she so, I get the sense that she's so removed from Earth in general that the only people she talks to are like alien leaders and superheroes. And so to be confronted, and she doesn't have kids, and she's confronted with this teenager who loves her and wants to be around her. It's such a great dynamic. Now, throwing in Monica is interesting because that's like the guilt of not going back to Earth and reminding us of her friend, and this is a friend's daughter, and a friend died. And, you know, I like that too, because having the tripod allows it to not just be about like the star and the fan, but more, like Monica gets to relate to both of them in different ways that makes the trio work. And I do think it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Monica relates to Carol, and then Kamala relates to Captain Marvel.
Well, that's also true. Right. And yet also, Monica understands things about Kamala because Monica is from the real world that Carol doesn't understand.
Yeah.
So there's a thing that, like, a lot of queer people, and I'll get to why this tangent matters, queer people do when or if they're disowned by their families. They often go through a period of they're sent away. They're no longer part of their families. And for a period of time before you accept that, like, okay, that's what's happened to you, is you go through, if I'm just good enough, I can go back and show my parents, family, whatever, that I'm still a good person, even though I've been gone and apparently I've done this terrible thing by being queer, that I got, I can prove myself. If I'm just good enough, they'll accept me, even though I've done this terrible thing of being queer. And I saw Captain Marvel when she said, when Monica Rambeau said, that's not how family works, to Carol, because Carol was saying, if I was just proved to you that I could do this, I could fix this, that you'd accept me, that I really massively saw that as a queer analogy. Maybe I'm like totally projecting here, which I never do in a film ever.
but I don't think so. I think there's something there.
Yeah. And not to mention, of course, that the kiss on the cheek from Valkyrie, which is like, come on, Disney, just give us a queer character already.
And her marriage is political. It is so very political.
It's cool. Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of, if a queer person reading this goes, I'm seeing what you're nodding towards us there with all those little hit points there, but it's like, I saw it as a typical development, a queer person hears that, but B, it's typical Disney, where of course they're not going to give us a queer character. They're not going to make Captain Marvel gay. Anyway.
But they did seem to be exes, I would say, just reading
scene. Oh yeah, 100% an ex.
Who stayed in touch and are good friends.
I was going to say again, it fits with my thesis that she only knows world leaders and superheroes, right? I mean, Valkyrie, the ruler of Asgard, sure, right, her.
It's your friend, yeah.
I know, and I know this prince over here, and like that's what I do here is just meet with famous people all the time until Kamala.
I mean, they did kind of hint about her fame because, like, she, when they go down to the Bollywood planet, it should have had much more extensive dance numbers for a Bollywood thing. Anyway, when they go down there, she says, you know, I'm kind of famous here. And I think it's like Miss Marvel, I'm not sure, says, you're famous everywhere.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
did we lose something?
Okay.
Everything stopped for a second.
Yeah, it stopped for a second. That was so weird.
Okay.
I thought it was just me. I just remained silent.
No, it was just like, I mean, did we all just Zoom and think about what I said?
I think Zoom had a thing.
It was just so profound, James.
Sorry for all the editing, Stephen.
I just wrote down in my notes, Zoom had a thing, and there it is. It had the thing. What were we saying?
Famous everywhere.
Famous.
Yes. How, she is famous. Everybody would probably, everybody who spends enough time with Valkyrie will probably want to date her. I don't think I'm going out on any kind of limb to say that. Doesn't matter. Are you human? Are you male? Are you female? Are you something else? It doesn't matter because you'll kind of want to date her by the time you've spent a little time with her.
Didn't, I think it was in the Thor movie, there was a throwaway line about how she dated somebody for a while and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
So, we know who.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Samuel L. Jackson is in this movie as Nick Fury. He's such a key part of the original Captain Marvel movie that he has to be in here. I feel like the MCU doesn't know really what to do with him. Like, Secret Invasion,
not anymore.
The TV show, was a disaster, I think. But what's extra perplexing about it is it begins with Nick Fury beaming down from his space station and ends with him beaming back up to his space station because, like, they couldn't decide where it was or where. It feels very much like we just got to put him back where he is because in the Marvels, he's in the space station.
It was a one shot.
And the space station itself is sort of like, I guess we have space stations now. It's not super explained in general. You just kind of have to go with it. So I don't know. Is he necessary for this movie? I would say plot-wise, probably not. But thematically, given that it's the sequel to Captain Marvel, it's good to have him. You get the sense that he's sort of Carol's grounding to Earth, which is, that's a bad idea, but that's what he is. It gives
Especially because he's in space now.
Yeah, he gets a funny side bit with the Flerken kittens, which is great because it gives Goose something to do, which is lay eggs, apparently.
But, yeah, I liked the fact that I wanted him there. I loved his presence there because you saw his, you know, working with Monica as part of the space station crew, you know, to the point of, you know, when she gets caught on the other side of the reality rip, you know, he's genuinely grieving, you know, the fact that, you know, she's not there anymore. And, you know, he's, you know, gets surprised by all of a sudden he's got this teenage girl doing parkour around him to try and help him, you know, with these two Skrulls. Mm. And she's, you know, clever enough to toss him a weapon. And, you know, at the end, it's like all they needed to do was fist bump, you know, and he, you know, takes her in along with the others, recognizing that she's younger, she's less experienced, but she has a part to play in this and he expects her to do it. So for me, I mean, you know, Samuel L. Jackson is just wonderful in general, and I was very glad that he was in the movie.
And I like that he's just kind of grumpy and bemused, right? He's just like, what's going on? Like, it's good to have that character, and he does it well to be like, all this nonsense is going on, right? I'm tired of these snakes on this plane or whatever the equivalent here is.
These Flerkens on this space station. On this melon farming space station.
Yeah.
At one scene, right in the, towards the beginning, when they're first flipping between the three of them, and he's on the space elevator going up or down. I can't recall. I think possibly down. He's literally like a Kree warrior with like full armor and weapons. Turns up right in front of him, and he's just sitting there in a chair, and he shoots him. and it was like the most Nick Fury thing. It was like, dude, I'm not even going to get up.
No.
I'm just going to shoot. I
recommend looking. There's an interview with Iman Vellani talking about that scene in the filming and whether they were going to fist bump or elbow bump. And I will not spoil the punchline, and I cannot say it live on this podcast, but it was very good.
Okay.
That's good.
I liked him there because I liked sort of the, in one way, the nod to his history with Goose in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which, you know, kind of like I hadn't even remembered until they popped up and then he and Goose were together. And I was like, oh, that's right. Like, that's why he has the eye patch. Like, that kind of matters. And then I liked that he was there. I think he was also partly there as a foil for Kamala's parents, for, you know, and all of that. But it still doesn't feel like Marvel on the whole knows what to do with him. I agree with that a lot, because between Secret Invasion and the times we've seen him since, you know, Endgame and all that, like he's kind of at loose ends, and there's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, people grow and evolve and change. And, like, you know, we talked about watching a bunch of people do that right through the course of this film. But it's like nobody else knows what to do with him, like what's next for him now. And that part is kind of frustrating, because Nick Fury's really interesting. Sam Jackson's really interesting. Yeah. Like, all of that, I feel like there has to be a better answer than just sort of he swoops in from the space elevator when the plot demands it, which is kind of how this felt.
Yeah, it's like they're deploying Samuel L. Jackson instead of deploying Nick Fury.
Yeah.
I found that the interesting thing about that was that the relationship between him and Kamala Khan was, yeah, them developing their relationship. And then the mid-credit scene was Kamala Khan recruiting Hawkeye, well, the new Hawkeye.
Yeah, Kate Bishop.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Kate Bishop.
And the thing is, that's a direct callback she is...
She's just doing Nick Fury there.
She's doing Nick Fury. Yeah, she's doing Nick Fury recruiting Iron Man. And it's like, it's almost like, even the colors, I went back and rewatched a little bit of that, and it's like, it's even the same colors in the room, like that. They it's like, okay, it's like, yes, we don't know what to do with Nick Fury, but in a way, Nick Fury just handed off to Kamala Khan.
Mm. I mean, I also liked that in the scenes. I don't know, like, I'm not saying Nick Fury was like, it was a Charlie's Angels situation, but he was at least a sort of authority figure, if not necessarily above them.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, but, right.
But, you know, he was at least kind of like, okay, you know, can you go check out this
thing?
He was
the organizer.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think he had a necessary position just from a kind of like maneuvering them around a bit so that they ended up next to each other and had an adventure.
Yeah. He sort of lost that role after Winter Soldier, didn't he?
Yeah, so now he's like the guy in the chair again. In space, though. The chair is in space, but he's still in the chair.
I did think it was interesting because he's, you know, like this absolute super spy, you know, whatever. And as soon as Kamala sees him through the window, she's like, it's Nick Fury. It's like, Nick Fury looks like?
He's famous. They're all famous. She knows. She's on the message board. She's on Reddit. She gets it. The that scene, by the way, that's quoting the end credit scene in Iron Man where the Avengers gets mentioned for the first time, is not a mid-credit scene. It's like at the end of the movie, which I found a little bit curious. Like, they loved it so much that they wanted, and they didn't feel like the movie had a real button, so they gave it the button of Kamala having her big idea, and then cut to she's recruiting people to be Young Avengers, essentially. We should mention the actual mid-credit scene, which is the setup by, I mean, it's obvious the moment that there's a tear between universes that what's going to happen is that somebody's going to be on the other side in order to close it, which is what happens
to
Monica. And they're like, okay, they're gonna, I was sitting there saying, no doubt in my mind, we're gonna see where she went, because we haven't seen that yet. And they set that up, and we do see where she went. She is in a medical facility. Her mother appears to be there, but it's not her mother, because this is a an alternate reality, and she's wearing the binary costume, which was a costume worn by Carol Danvers in the comics when she was a member of the X-Men or worked with the X-Men. You don't need to know that, but that's the reference that they're making there. And of course, the Beast, blue and furry and voiced by Kelsey Grammer, like in those original X-Men movies, comes in to talk to them both. And that's all we get of that.
But it was enough. Oh my God, the theater reaction both times.
And we get a big, we get the X door in the background.
There is, there are X's everywhere in that scene.
Yeah. Yeah. And you get, and in the background,
It felt like a really big deal, like the first, like when Kamala's friend says mutant the first time, we get the M word in the show, you know? Like, it's fun to kind of watch those things get laid down and, you know, as they pave that road. But I had read somewhere that they had shot all of that and then, like, after the fact, changed their minds. And so instead of having a mid-credit scene and an end-credit scene, we had the button at the end of the movie and then a mid-credit scene and then nothing later was the thing that I had seen, that for whatever reason they decided they were going to change it. But I did like that it was a throwback. And I also the same sort of huge reaction in the theater when I saw it with a bunch of people, you know, especially when you hear the X-Men music and they cut over. And like, in case you weren't aware, you know, the door has a giant X on it.
Also, for those who don't remember, Lashana Lynch also is in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, where she's playing an alternate Captain Marvel. So they do keep bringing that actress back in these alternate roles, because we know that the one in the MCU died of cancer, and there's the whole thing with the snap and all of that going on there. I'm not sure I believe that this is a commitment to anything, just like I'm sure that there's no commitment to, like, John Krasinski's not going to actually be Reed Richards in the Fantastic Four movie. It's all parallels and alternates and all of that, so they'll find another way to do it. But still, it's directly tying into those old X-Men movies, which is fun. Yeah. And the suggestion that, don't worry, Monica is still out there. She's just lost for now. And if they want to use her again, they will presumably bring her back.
Have a way to do that.
If I had a prediction that we actually won't see Teyonah Parris as Monica again until whenever they get around to making Secret Wars,
that's supposed to be the end of this phase, isn't it?
Well, at least initially.
Who knows?
Who knows? But I think it's going to be. I think it's going to be a while. But honestly, my theater also was pretty excited to see Beast, but I had the stronger reaction to the button when Pizza Dog shows up on the camera. I just sat bolt upright and I was doing the Leonardo DiCaprio pointing thing.
Yeah. Yes. Me too.
I think you said something really interesting there, Jason, about, you know, I'm not sure that this is a promise, because when we get into talking about the MCU directionally, you know, I'm not as confident that there's going to be a young Avengers project as I would have been a few months ago. But I desperately want it, because the glee, the barely contained glee that Iman Vellani has as being Nick Fury. And I loved Hawkeye. I loved Hayley Steinfeld, and I see the potential here.
Oh God, yes,
for sure.
Absolutely.
And I think it's a perfect button to end this movie on, because the movie was fundamentally a fun romp with great characters that you love, which is what sort of the MCU began with.
Yes.
Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth, you know, Tom Hiddleston, you know, characters, actors, good actors with good stuff, interesting stuff given to do. And I feel like this movie sort of signals that the MCU can be that again. I just really want them to follow through with it, and I've got my concerns.
I mean, I would rather have a Young Avengers TV series than a movie.
Yeah.
Give me the TV series, bring in all the people. I mean, you could have, like, the various team members they could have. Like, America Chavez could just hop over and get, you know, Monica Rambeau in about 5 minutes. Do that at the start. It's out of the way.
And let's cast a Miles Morales.
Yes.
Yes, sure. Please.
Well, if you can pry him away from Sony, but you could maybe. So this is the larger question of the MCU. We are in an interesting state here, and I feel like everybody overreacts to everything. This movie did not do well in theaters, although, again, it did not It also didn't get marketed particularly well. I feel like Marvel didn't know how to market it. And I look at the trailers where they started marketing it as fun, and then they had a panic attack and started marketing all the action scenes from it, which actually turned people I know off from a movie they were excited to see, because suddenly the ad started making it look like it was going to be another one of those Marvel movies where there's a portal and a bunch of armies fighting in CGI and all of that, even though that happens, but that's like not the point. Like Marvel wasn't sure what to do here.
Embrace the Barbie. Girls have just as much money to spend as boys do.
Well, and they did.
It's
and then
just as green.
And then they got cold feet, and now the box office number is going to be used as a reason not to make movies like this, which is a mistake. But I would argue that Marvel has been on this trajectory for a while now, which is they had a big climax. A lot of their actors are out of contract. Those are the characters everybody knows. Of course, it was going to be hard to pick up the pieces from Endgame. It was going to be hard, and it is hard, and they are struggling, and they are making movies that are, some of them are good, some of them are not good. This, I would argue, is one of their better movies, and yet it did badly at the theater. Let's throw in another aside here, which is the actor that they've chosen to hang their Thanos of this round of movies on is going on trial. And they may not want to work with him anymore. And you put all of the finances, the changing finances at Disney, which is trying to cut its costs, and you throw that in a bucket. And you do have to wonder if when earlier somebody mentioned, I think it was Kelly, what's supposed to happen. Like, I don't believe that anything that's supposed to happen that hasn't already been released is going to happen at all in the Marvel world, because it feels like they are going to retrench, they're going to change their approach, and they may have to replace the villain that they were going to use in future movies. So I don't know where they're going from now. I do know that they should look at this movie and see all of the things about it that succeeded creatively and use them. But it's a weird place. I also seeing and mentioning the cheers for like the Beast, part of me thinks that their retrenchment is going to be, let's do X-Men and Fantastic Four. let's lean into the characters that everybody really knows who haven't been seen in this iteration and do that instead, because it's probably an easier sell more than anything else. I don't know what you
think. I'm a Doctor Who fan, an Apple fan, and an MCU fan. In all of these cases, I'm used to feeling like everything is doomed. Everything's just going to fail.
It's all terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. That being said, I what really worries me is the retrenchment of Disney Plus. I've got a closet full of comics from the days when I was getting damn near half of Marvel's output because I wanted to be just immersed in that interlocking story. Mm-hmm. And all of the content that Marvel spat out on Disney Plus, all of the movies, you know, Shang-Chi, The Eternals, all these things with all these things that are being promised on that. I'm feeling like, no, it's not sustainable. And what I'm worried about is that the stuff that for me has the most creative promise, and I really do think that a Young Avengers project would absolutely be there, you know, that there's just not going to be the room for them anymore. And I think the natural place for those things would be on Disney Plus if there was any money to make them. And I just don't have that confidence either.
The thing about this that I think, and sometimes I feel like I'm the only one who remembers, John Carter is a movie that Disney made. And once they made it, they didn't know what to do with it. And I remember reading an article that said the book it was adapted from is named Princess of Mars. And we can't put princess in the title because then boys won't go see it. And we can't call, you know, we can't talk about who John Carter is because then girls won't go see it. So they just named it John Carter. So it's just this
terrible guy's name, random name.
Like, I know that they had some story issues with it and things like that, but like they didn't know what to do with it when they put it out. And that's how I feel about this one. It was not served by the fact that they drove the train toward that release date, even though nobody could go talk about the movie beforehand. And then that allowed the internet outrage machine to be responsible for what everybody thought about this movie ahead of time. Then Marvel had a panic attack and went, oh, the internet may be mad about a thing and we'd better do something about it. Instead of saying, hey, you know, maybe we should just, maybe we should put it out there as it is and see, because there are people in the world. And this is the thing I think Marvel has the hardest time with, is there are people in the world who will enjoy a movie that's just a fun movie. And, you know, I know we've talked before about, like, one of the things that Marvel was doing that was really interesting was expanding the definition of what was a comic book movie versus other kinds of, you know, like, we have heist movies and we have workplace comedies and we have these other things that that feature comic book characters, which makes them comic book movies, but they're not comic book movies.
They're in other genres, right? The movies, some of the most successful MCU movies are, I would argue, are movies that are sort of in other genres, because they
feature comic characters
that feature superhero type characters.
Yeah,
it's, I mean, I know we had the writer strike and the actor strike, and so things are there, but things are weird. On top of all the weirdness going on at Marvel, but it does feel like that is one of the reasons why they're probably going to make changes, is that they've had a lot of time, the producers have, to think about things, and they've got a bunch of stuff that wasn't in production that they can now consider making changes to. And consider how bananas this is, given how we've had MCU movies since 2008. Next year, there will be one MCU movie released. There's only one on the schedule between now and 2025, when the Captain America movie with, you know, Sam as Captain America
which they have filmed. That one's finished.
Yeah, the ones that are filmed are coming out. But here's the thing. So there's only one movie that you could call an MCU movie between now and February of 25, more than a year. And that movie kind of doesn't count because it's Deadpool 3, which is interesting in a lot of ways, because it's a Marvel Deadpool movie for the first time.
Oh,
it's going to be R-rated. It's going to play with the whole universe. It is its own thing, but we are, after the Marvels being released, knowing that that Captain America movie has been shot, although who knows what they'll reshoot, because they do that. We're really at I know there's TV projects coming, but, like, it's a stopping point and a rethink point. And I do wonder where they're going to go from here. I hope they don't take the wrong lessons from the Marvels, because I don't think the Marvels did poorly at the box office because of the content of it. Then we all saw it and we're like, what do you mean this is a box office disaster? This is a fun movie. What are you talking about?
I am angry at fandom bros and Disney marketers for not doing right by Iman Vellani, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They seeded the space for this film and they just left it open and it got filled by those angry fanboys.
Yeah.
And you see that because the Marvels on IMDb has a 60% rating, but on Rotten Tomatoes, the audience score is 84%. People loved this film.
Yeah.
And
if they went to see it, if they bothered to go see it.
If they went to see it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And my worry is that exactly what everyone else is saying, that they're going to take the lesson of the 60% and not the lesson of the 84%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just hope that they don't. Also, I hope they don't load. Like, one of the reasons the enthusiasm for people going out to the movie theater and seeing a Marvel movie is down, I mean, part of it is the pandemic broke people's habits of going to movie theaters. But part of it is going to other recent Marvel movies and being less impressed. I think the only Marvel movie in the last couple of years or the last few years that was really just kind of broken was Eternals, which I'll say again, should have just been a 10 episode HBO series. It would have been much more interesting then, but as a movie, it just kind of was broken. I know a lot of people don't like Quantumania. I thought it was okay. I thought Wakanda Forever was really good. I liked Love and Thunder. I know some people didn't. A lot of people didn't like the Doctor Strange movie. I did.
I thought Shang-Chi was fun.
Shang-Chi is
great.
Shang-Chi
had some
fun.
No, yeah. Shang-Chi is amazing.
So I worry. My point is that I worry
also. None of
these
products really had a consensus that this is the great one Marvel movie.
And like I said, it's other than maybe Spider-Man, but it's just a come down from Endgame, right? I think that this was going to happen. It was inevitable. They lost a lot of their major recognizable characters because their stories ended, and they had a climax to a movie, and you're trying to get people to like, no, keep going. And it's like, but no, your narrative momentum kind of ended. So it was always going to be hard. The question is, like you've all said, what lessons did they take from this? And it would be a real shame if, because the Marvels was sort of the last one out the door, that they would... Oh, I'll point out, Guardians of the Galaxy did really well, but that guy's running DC's films now, so they can't really follow that one up. I hope they don't take the wrong lessons from it, because this was a fun movie, and like fun movie is what you should be doing. You just need to find the right mix so that people will want to go to your movies again. Yeah.
We've got Deadpool next, which should, in theory, also be a fun,
That's
going to
be a hit. It's going to be a big hit.
I'm so excited,
but
you guys.
But you've got, in that, you've got Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, and who knows how many other...
Again.
Fox mutants in it.
Yeah.
And MCU characters too, because it is an MCU, right?
Yeah. And it seems like the perfect film if you are trying to integrate, you know, you've got all this Fox nonsense and you've got all this whatever nonsense. Deadpool seems like the movie where, you know, for whatever reason, they just end up here. Or
Deadpool's just a giant plot hammer. I mean, all the subtlety of an elephant stampede, because that's kind of always been his jam. That's what I love about Deadpool.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it for that.
You could see a scene in Deadpool where he just like moves a whole bunch of action figures from one section of a store to the other section of the store. Is like, okay, there you go.
We had the Spider-Man bringing in the Sony multiverse, now we've got Deadpool, well, and the Marvels bringing in the Fox multiverse. I agree with you, James. I could literally see Deadpool playing with action figures and just one big plot hammer of just going, oh, we can put
all these
ones together.
Put them in the big box that says MCU on the side. And there.
I mean, and that's the thing that I worry about too is, Chip, you mentioned it earlier, as an Apple fan, you know, this feels to me a little bit like, we saw it with Star Wars a little bit too. And, you know, we see it with Apple all the time. Apple only made almost all the money instead of all the money. Obviously, they're doing something terribly wrong and nobody stops and says, you know, if you swapped out the product, if you swapped out some other company name instead of Apple, it would be an amazing set of results, right? And, and we have the same thing here. And it was the same with Star Wars. This movie only made $100 million at the box office. So it's a box office failure. And yet, other film, any other movie would, that would be, spectacular, unbelievable results. And so, Marvel gets held to that standard
because it costs way more than that to make it, because they spend a lot of money on these movies, regardless of how it did at the box office. Like, they don't make these movies to make $100 million at the box office. There's no denying that.
Oh, no. But when people talk about them, they're like, oh, it only made $100 million. So obviously this movie is a failure, which isn't
the case.
When
if this movie was by some other company about, the same feel, but other characters with African-American director and a diverse cast of mostly women, anywhere else, it would have been considered a really solid, interesting movie with a lot of good things about it. But because it's part of the MCU, it's being held up against what came before.
I mean, it's your definition of failure. It's like, for the shareholders, it's a failure. For like people who like fun movies, it was not a failure.
No, I think there's a lot of analysis of art that comes from a business perspective, and I don't understand this. I was talking about this with friend of the podcast, Todd Vaziri, a while ago, that like there's this very weird, we're going to get him on here one of these days. There's this very weird thing. He was on the Flophouse, one of my favorite podcasts, and they were talking about Waterworld, and they all agreed basically, Waterworld's actually not a bad movie. Everybody is convinced Waterworld is bad because it cost a lot of money to make and didn't make it back at the box office. And it's like, unless you're a shareholder of the company that made it, why do you care what it cost? What you should care about, if you're just on the other side, we can do if you're a business analyst or whatever, but like art, the quality of art is not determined by how much money, how much profit it made. It is never done that way.
Iman Vellani had the perfect response in an interview. I don't want to focus on something that's not even in my control, because what's the point? That's for Bob Iger. Yeah. The box office has nothing to do with me. I'm happy with the finished product, and the people that I care about also enjoyed the film. It's genuinely a good time watching this movie, and that's all we can ask for with these films. It has superheroes. It takes place in space. It's not that deep, and it's about teamwork and sisterhood. It's a fun movie, and I'm just happy that I can share it with people. That's the perfect response that she had.
Yeah, so that's, I think that's a good place to come from, which is we can talk about the business dynamics about this, but they are irrelevant when it comes to, was this a good movie? Was this a fun movie? Which I think we all agree it was. I will say, I hear your argument about if this was from someone else, but the fact is it's a Marvel movie with theoretically a built-in audience and a Marvel movie budget, and it did it did really badly at the box office, and they need to figure out why, but I don't think it's the content of the movie, because the fact is... If you see it, you paid for it. Why did people not go see it? And I think those are questions that they need to ask about the marketing and about where the state of the MCU is in general. But it's not anything to do with what the content of the movie is, because you have to actually pay to see it, to see the movie.
Well, and it's wrapped up in going to movies, too. Like the larger question, like we talked about earlier, about the pandemic breaking people's habit of going to a theater when you know it's going to come out, when you know it's going to come out anyway, and nobody has to release streaming numbers. Disney can come in later and go, it's a success.
They have hurt themselves with that perception, but the fact is also that the previous movies in this era also made more money than that. So like, there's only so much. Yes, they've hurt it, but like, that also doesn't explain this. Like this movie failed at the box office. Bottom line, it has nothing to do with the creative aspect of it, and I hope that they don't take the wrong lessons from it, because that would be a mistake.
I think you can't entirely rule out like racists and misogynists as well.
Yep. You can't.
In the movie.
Yeah.
Sure, it's a woman-led movie, and there are people who don't want to see those movies, and that they are part of Marvel's audience, and it's a challenge. Although, I think it's more than that too. I think there's a lot of dynamic going on here. The problem is if people just take the wrong lessons from it. Something that we only mentioned in passing that I wanted to say is, if you sit through the credits, which you should do, because there's that scene where the Beast is there, and you're like, what is that all about? You will notice something, or you may have noticed something that I certainly noticed and I wanted to highlight here, which is, this is also a movie primarily made by women. The writers are women. The director is a woman. The cinematographer is a man, but the editors are, one of the editors is a woman. The score is by Laura Cartman. Most of the leads in most of the departments are women. It is remarkable, and shouldn't be remarkable, but I noticed that this is a movie that has a lot of women in leadership roles in the production of the movie, and I wanted to point it out, because yes, that should be common, but it's not, and I noticed it for this movie that the women were in charge. Good for them.
For all of the business faults and the marketing faults of the last few years of Marvel Disney, I feel like the storytellers over there, and Kevin Feige, I feel like they've got their heart in the right place. They have been spending the last few years broadening the palette. It really exploded, of course, with Black Panther, but the MCU is becoming more diverse, and the behind the camera as well as in front of it. And I do hope that in whatever form it continues.
Same.
Yeah.
Ditto.
Yes.
All right. We have talked for a while about the Marvels. If you haven't seen it, you should go see it. And if you can't go see it because it's not in theaters anymore, then hopefully it will be shortly available on all digital platforms that you can partake of it. It's fun. That's the bottom line. I feel like we all said it here. It's a fun ride. It's what a fun movie should be. And the fact that people are all kind of like gnashing their teeth about it, I find hilarious and baffling and off-putting, because business issues aside, like, I don't know how you don't go to this movie and have a good time, because it's just a fun romp, and Iman Vellani is great. Anyway, so go see it. That's what we're saying. Or stay, see it. If it's later and it's on your TV, you could just stay and see it. You don't have to go to a different room or something. You can just stay there and watch it. All right. Let me thank my panelists for being here to talk about the Marvels. Chip Sutter, thank you.
Stop running and let the kittens eat you. You will be fine.
Chip even leaned back from the microphone to give that an effect. Shannon Sutter, thank you.
Oh my God, we're a team.
James Thompson, thank you.
May our next meeting be joyful.
Sarah Bickerton, thank you.
Higher, further, faster, Jason.
Yes, always. And Kelly Gamont, thank you.
Thanks so much. I had a blast. And Jason, I found this weird pink egg thing over here.
It's okay. Just leave it there.
About it? Okay.
Just leave it there. It's going to be fun. It's going to be great. Everybody loves kittens. And thanks to everybody out there for listening to this episode of The Incomparable. We will see you next time.